There may be some jamming. There may be some oscillation. Whew! Sorry. Well, sorry, CQ. Closing down a moment. Hello, CQ. This is 2-Emma Talk. Ripple testing. This is 2-Emma Talk. Ripple testing. Are the signals okay? No, they're not. Wave your hand if it's all okay. No waves at all.
That was the voice of Captain Peter Eckersley testing equipment at the experimental Marconi radio station 2MT, which was established in Riddle in 1920. Captain Eckersley was actually the chief engineer, the first engineer there, and he later went on to become the chief engineer of the BBC, the original BBC, that was the British Broadcasting Company. And why, you may well ask, are we playing that clip today? Well, Nick Saturday sees Guglielmo's, I probably haven't pronounced that right, Marconi's birthday. He would have been 139, and to celebrate the occasion, Sandford Hill Museum in Chelmsford are holding an open day next Saturday. And my guest today, Peter Watkins, was probably the lead person arranging the various displays. So first off, Peter, welcome to Phoenix FM.
Oh, hello there, Scott.
Now, Peter, before we get on to what you can see at the museum, perhaps we could find out a little about you. And I believe you spent some time working with Marconi Marine. What exactly did that entail?
Yes, I spent about 4 years at sea with Marconi Marine as a ship's radio officer. This was about 50 years ago. In those days, we had the largest merchant fleet in the world, and Marconi supplied much of the radio equipment. Our main role was safety of life at sea, and we spent much of our time monitoring the distress frequency.
That'd be 2182, was it?
No, that's 500 KC.
Oh, it was 500 in those days.
This was in Morse.
Oh, yes. Right. Okay, yeah. Right. So would I be right in thinking that you're responsible for including a large amount of the marine radio equipment at the museum?
Well, since I retired from teaching, I became a volunteer helper at the Industrial Museum. That's at Sandford Mill. One of the first of the projects I became involved in was to help recreate a ship's radio room of the 1960s. This was something I thought I'd left behind many years ago.
But you created one radio room. There's now five ship's radio rooms there, aren't there?
That's correct, yes.
Going back to goodness knows when.
Well, we just a few years ago, we were very lucky in that we were given an amazing collection of radio equipment. A guy in Cornwall had got his own museum and collected radio equipment from salvaged ships and so on. And some of this equipment goes right back to the very start of radio, the sort of thing that the Titanic would have had.
Good heavens. Well, you see, going back to sort of 1905, something like that.
That's correct, yes.
Good heavens above, right, okay. So the Chelmsford Amateur Radio Society, I believe they're also going to be at the museum next week, is that right?
Yes, that's right. CARS, as we call them, yeah. They'll be broadcasting from the hut throughout the day. Some of the broadcasts are voice, and others are in Morse, but... They have this scheme where they make contact with stations throughout the world, and if they do make contact, they have the option of sending out these cards, these sort of postcards, which are called QSO cards.
It's QSL card, isn't it?
QSL, sorry.
QSL card, yeah.
You could be right.
QSO is the actual contact. I think the confirmation is a QSL card.
Yeah. Right, I'm staying corrected there. Anyway, the cards have the call sign of the station, yeah, and also some kind of picture or... Yeah.
And it's a special call sign, isn't it?
There is. Don't ask me what
it is. No, I've got to ask you what it is. That would be very naughty. And on top of that, I think there's a number of hands-on exhibits as well, are there not?
Oh,
yes.
Can
you tell us anything about those?
Yes. Apart from the radio side, and I should emphasise that the museum is not just radio and it's not just Marconi's. So there's all kinds of things
as
well.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
What else is there, then?
Well, there's... The mill that stood on the site originally was for milling flour and so on. And so there's quite a lot to do with milling.
Yeah.
There's also a blacksmith forge that we put together there. There are also the other companies in Chelmsford, like Hoffman's and Crompton's, they're represented as well. So, and there's some quite interesting bits and pieces. So I wouldn't like people to get the idea it's just a radio thing. It isn't, and it's not just for Marconi people. It's for anybody. We do get quite a lot of quite young children coming along. And the bit that you referred to, the hands-on thing, it's probably the biggest contribution is to local schools, primary schools and infant schools. So we've put together a number of experiments which support the national curriculum in key stages one and two. And so the children come along and do these experiments. And some of these experiments are linked up with equipment in the museum. So not only can they play about with school-type apparatus, but they can also look at backup material, which, you know, like, for instance, Hoffman's was involved in making ball bearings.
Oh, I see, yes. So who was it that's actually put these hands-on exhibits together?
Well, the sort of starting point is with Dr. Jeff Bowles. He's the manager of...
Oh, so he does exist?
Oh, yes, yes,
very
much so.
I have to tell you, I tried to ring him. I found it slightly easier getting hold of the Pope.
Oh, really?
Yes, well, he was very difficult to get hold of,
The problem is, at the moment, he's almost a one-man band, and that's one of the reasons why he's not here rather than me. Because they're also doing a radio thing today from the mill, so he can't be in two places at once.
There you are.
But he comes up with the ideas generally, and then there's a group of us who are mainly retired engineers and people like that who actually make the equipment.
Now, going back to Marconi for a moment, I think that back in 1919, he actually bought a luxury craft from the Archduke of Austria, which he then went on to rename Electra, and he transformed it into a personal floating laboratory. Can you tell us a little bit about what was on that vessel and how it was used to further the development of radio?
Yes, well, the equipment, of course, changed over time. So, and some of the very early equipment, we've actually got some of it in the museum.
So really?
You can actually see it and almost touch it. We're quite pleased with that. But and the later equipment, of course, was... Well, it extended over a period of about 15 years or something, so it changed quite a bit in his time. But he carried out these, as you say, it was a floating laboratory.
Yeah.
And probably the first experiment of real note was when the ship sailed south as far as the Cape Verde Islands. Mm-hmm. And at that time, they were... using different frequencies, but they were using them on HF, high frequency, which hadn't really been used up till then very much. So they didn't really know too much about how radio waves behave, being reflected by the layers in the atmosphere and so on. And also, if you're involved with radio, you'll know that with HF... the range and varies very much depending upon what time of day it is.
Yes.
So
and the season.
And the season, yes, and all kinds of other things. But they, Electra and Marconi collected data on this, which was very valuable in at the time. I mean, at the time they were still. They hadn't got very clear ideas about what was going on.
Yeah.
And so, but as a result of this, they moved on to use HF, and there was a major change in the plans for HF. Hmm. And in fact...
Now, HF is high frequency.
Yeah, high frequency, yes. Yeah. And a scheme was introduced to link up all the countries in what was then the British Empire, such as Australia and Canada and so on.
Yes.
And this scheme became known as the Imperial Chain. And as part of that, there was a receiving station at Brentwood, not far from here, which, very important part of it, and also a transmitting station at Ongar, So it was quite local, really.
I think Onga, the transmitting station, is still there. I may be wrong, but it was certainly there some years ago, a few years ago. So yeah. And I believe that, as you say, the receiving station here was almost opposite where we are now at the Brentwood Centre. It's just down the road at the corner of Hatch Road and Doddinghurst Road, and there's a Marconi Gardens that exists there right now. I'm reliably informed. Yes. Now, anyway, you've built a model of this Electra vessel, haven't you?
Yes, I've been messing around with this for about 3 years now, and I'm happy to say that it's almost complete.
And it's going to be on display as well.
Yes, I'm going to have it on display.
And but behind in a glass case so that nobody breaks
not at all. No, we don't have too many glass cases in Sanford Mill. But along with that, I have been researching the story of Electra, and it really is a very interesting story. You know, the early parts are a bit like Downton Abbey or whatever it's called.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
It was a sort of a story of the idle rich. But there were lots of, you know, at one stage it was taken over by the Admiralty in the First World War. Mm. And in the Second World War, it was taken over by the Kriegsmarine, the Germans. So, and then eventually, not in the end, wasn't then, but it was then sunk by the British off the Dalmatian coast, and then given to the Yugoslavs, or the Yugoslavs had it and gave it to the Italians, and the idea was that they would restore it, but in the end it didn't happen, and finally it got chopped up into bits, I'm afraid.
It's rather a
shame.
And
the bits are now scattered around Italy.
Well, if they'd had any sense, they'd have converted it into a pirate radio ship and anchored it off the coast of Frinton. We started this feature with an excerpt of those early transmissions to TMT, and I believe you actually have the original hut from which those earliest transmissions were made in your exhibition. Is it the real hut, or is it just a mock-up?
Oh, yes. It's definitely the real hut, and one half of it is we've got some sort of dummies and so on.
Yes.
But we've also got within the hut, we haven't got the original transmitter, because that was sort of put together almost every time they had a broadcast. They put the transmitter back together, and it didn't survive as such. But we do have transmitters in the collection which are very similar in style to the original transmitter. So you can see something that looks very much like it. Hmm. But one of the original features, which I think is rather nice, is that we have the piano that they used to use. They had informal concerts that they broadcast, and they used to collect their piano from the local pub. It was the Cock and Bell, but now it's called the Blue Bridge Restaurant. So that was brought across and trundled down the lane to the radio station.
Well, bearing in mind where you've told me where the radio station was, that must have been quite difficult to trundle a piano all that way.
Yes, I think it must have been. Yes.
Particularly if it rained. It wouldn't have done any good to the tuning of the piano.
Well, I'm not sure it's terribly well in tune even now.
Well, look, Peter, I could go on for hours talking about this, but I'm afraid we've rather run out of time. But before you go, perhaps you could just remind us of exactly where and when this event is taking place.
Yes, well, it's all day, well, starting at 10 and finishing at 5, at in Sanford Mill Road. Now, most people won't know where that is, but I would suggest that... Oh, it's on the 27th, Saturday the 27th.
Right, so it's a week today.
A week today, yes. Yes.
What time? About 10 o'clock in the morning?
10 o'clock, yes. Yes.
And it goes on till 5?
Till 5.
And isn't it Sanford Mill Road? It's off Chelmer Village Way in
Chelmer
Village,
right,
isn't it?
That's right, yes. Yeah. I would suggest if you know where the Army and Navy roundabout is, and you head out towards Colchester, the first roundabout you come to, you take the second right.
But hang on, you're not going on, you're going on the old A12.
The old A12. Yes, not the new one. Yes, you're quite right there.
Yeah.
Yes, the old A12, across the meads there.
Yes.
And but if you take the second right out of that roundabout and head down there, you go over another roundabout, a small one, and then you're not far from Asda's, the supermarket. Right. So many people in the area would know Asda's. But just before you come to Asda's, there's a turning on the right, Sandford Mill Road or Lane, and that's the one to go down. And it gradually gets narrower and narrower, and you think, oh, it can't possibly be down there, but it is.
And I think the postcode is CM26NY, so if you shove that in your sat-nav, hopefully it will take you there and not deliver you into a river or something.
Yes.
Good stuff. Thank you very much indeed for coming in, Peter.